It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 10th day of June 2021. We are almost a third of the way through the month of June. That's hard to believe. This being one of those 31-day Junes and all, I guess sometime tomorrow will be a third of the way. Yeah, you know what I mean. It's the 10th day of June 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. It's also where you can find the podcast as well, when the program isn't live. Mm-hmm. And if you should happen to want to augment your live listening experience, well, by Jove, run on by HeadOn.live, click on chat room. If you never have before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and hop right in, and you'll be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. Thank you very kindly, Roger. Roger saying good job with Brad yesterday. I always have a blast when Brad and I get to chat, and yesterday was no different. Like I said, talking to him, it's hard to believe that we've been talking for 17 years. But we have. My, how time flies when you're having fun. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you do pop by the chat room, you will be greeted by the aforementioned early arrivers and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave, and he is capably assisted by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan. Steve! Mm-hmm. Got to do that, you know. And here we are. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and, well, we have some. Poor Jared Huffman. That had nothing but thorns yesterday, and, well, we'll get there, because first we have to do the thank yous, because every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So, that sounds like Caesar Socks at the door there. Thanks go out to our 10th day of the month subscribers, and that means thanks to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to Judy. Thank you to Dan. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. This is that time of the month when, if anybody is interested in becoming a new sponsor and helping to keep this program going, it would be mightily welcome. There's a relatively small handful of people who keep this program going out of an audience that, a community, not an audience, but out of a community that is considerably larger. And thanks go every evening and at the beginning of every program and every day to every one of the people who do, with their kind gifts, make this program possible. We do need new subscribers. More subscribers. Either through Patreon when it comes out first of the month, or PayPal, which the interface for that is at the main page at HeadOn.live, and it'll come out whatever day you sign up. So thank you either way. And that, thank you. Thank you. No, as I said, it wasn't so sunny in San Rafael yesterday evening when Jared Huffman tried to hold his first in-person town hall post-COVID. Oh, God. Yeah. The maggots were out in force, barking and grunting and hooting. It was very carefully set up. Social distancing was still in place because, well, Representative Huffman is intelligent. And what? Hilarity ensued? Well, no, not really. But moranity ensued. Maggotry ensued. A gang of maggot anti-vaxxers invaded the carefully managed, socially distanced space. People were told if they wanted to attend the town hall that they should wear face masks. They were told to have their proof of vaccination to enter the sunny San Rafael Community Center. Not yesterday evening, but Tuesday evening. There were to be no big signs or banners. And questions for Representative Huffman were to be submitted in advance. Because they were trying to avoid exactly this. I mean, this is the Bay Area, but it's a densely populated area, and so therefore it becomes impossible for anyone to have anything nice because we have maggots. About just a few minutes after the meeting started, about 200 grunting, barking, hooting, smolicking, grabulating, marping maggots all burst into the meeting, into the event. About, yeah, like I said, about 200 of them. Wasn't a mask to be seen anywhere. Some were so stupid that they wore their "I ain't got no vaccine" buttons because they'd had those made. They brought their urine-colored snake flags, and they brought their signs that said, "Fuck Joe Biden!" Yeah, just another lovely day with the maggots ruining things for people. And they wandered grunting and barking and hooting around the room. And then finally, one guy jumped up on the stage and sat down in front of Representative Huffman and was carrying a sign that said, and I'm not kidding, "All the ferrets died!" Oh, ferrets. Really? Maybe they died on June the 31st. I don't know. To Representative Huffman's credit, he didn't call the cops. These idiots turned the first in-person town hall into a super spreader event. And the one reporter whose work I read, Peter Byrne from Pacific Sun, said it appeared that all the crazies were locals from Marin County. Jesus, really? Mm-hmm. But Jared Huffman went on to try to answer the questions that were given to him in advance. All the ferrets died, dude. At one point tried to tear a mask off of somebody's face, an elderly person's face. Dudette. And that's when Jared Huffman said, "Mm-mm, that ain't going to do." And I'd be interested to see the numbers of Trump votes versus Biden votes in Marin County in 2020. I would have expected it to be a thumping, but it there were enough to send 200 of them into the community center there. He was plucky. Jared Huffman was talking about how disappointed he was that the Senate failed to support the idea of the bicameral bipartisan January 6th investigation. That's when the maggots started booing again and grunting about Biden is an illegitimate president, which is hilarious considering the fact that these assholes were supporting a guy who lost the popular vote not once but twice. And then some woman with a Stepford kind of permanently plastered grin on her face led a group of children wearing fairy wings to march around the room, and the maggots just loved that. And the anti-vaxxer assholes, by the way, were all white, of course. Vax passports illegally discriminate. Yeah, you're right, Steve in New York pointing out. Damn, the Antifa, Black Lives Matter. No, it's not Black Lives Matter because the BLM is out there working to change the orbit of the moon and the earth. And we know that from yesterday's program. I'm really fighting to maintain my equanimity over things with things like this, because if that had been a Republican's town hall and people had been behaving that way over, say, the fact that Nitwit Nero is a serial is a credibly accused serial of sexual abuse and rape committer, the cops would have come in, and at the very least, it would have been pepper spray and tear gas for everyone. But no. KTVU got the video that you just heard the audio from, the grunting and the barking and the hooting. And as they prepared to leave, the anti-vaxxers, they gathered outside and they had a chat about all the dead ferrets. And there are these ferrets that exist primarily in their minds, I think, who they say, and the ferrets all died. All the ferrets died! Them's fake ferrets! All the ferrets died when they were injected with the COVID vaccine. Needless to say, that didn't happen. That exists only in their fetid minds. Then they marched through downtown sunny San Rafael, waving their fuck Biden flags and grunting and barking, hooting about giant hoaxes. And then they went home and, I don't know, drank bleach or something. I mean, these are some intensely stupid white people. There's no getting around the fact. But the problem is there's enough of them to make things shitty for the rest of us. As Steve in New York pointed out, and these magnetic vaccines, barcodes, Bill Gates, 5G, zombies! I wonder what the water cooler gossip's like in Representative Huffman's office these days. Well, thank you. Thank you, Kyle. No, you're not commenting too much. Don't self-censor, my friend. Kyle noting, thank you, Robin, and the community for keeping me company for 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week. Anytime you want to share, you just chime right in. Ah, okay. That explains it. Thank you for the demographic information to Dave number 11. Roughly half of District 2, which is where what Jared Huffman represents, is part of Jefferstan. Aha. And Santa Rosa, California, is chock full of maggots. Chock-a-block. Can't swing a dead ferret without hitting a maggot in Santa Rosa. Remind me to stay out of Santa Rosa. Marin County is so pretty. Well, okay. Marin County's, and again, Peter Byrne at Pacific Sun said they appeared to be all Marin Countyans, but Marin County, thank you for serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, Flavio. Marin County's returns in November of 2020, Biden, 128,288 votes, or 82.33%. Trump, 24,612 maggots, or 15.79%. And yet these are the motivated ones. I guess nobody must have told the Antifa to come out and do, no. But there's a lesson here. Namely that, you know, these vocal, noisy, stupid political minorities can ruin shit for the rest of us. People might have actually wanted to hear what Representative Huffman had to say, and he had some good news. Among other things, And look, there were people there from the Democratic sane side who were a little bit miffed at him. Supporters of elk at Point Reyes National Seashore. They wanted to talk about that. Didn't bark and grunt and hoot. They didn't have any children with butterfly wings, fairy wings. They didn't have any signs about dead ferrets. No. You know, he talked about money that he had gotten, $24 million, to extend the SMART train from, Healdsburg? And he talked about local infrastructure monies that he had brought in and forest management resources that he had brought in. And he talked about making the Postal Service better. But then the maggots started grunting and booing again when he mentioned that California's population is growing. Because I'm sure they think that it's illegal aliens. Mm-hmm. You know, the maggots got upset over ideas of not being at constant perpetual brink of war with Iran. They despise Medicare for all. They don't want their betters taxed anymore because one of these days they might be billionaires too. They're temporarily embarrassed billionaires, the maggots. Yeah. And I'm not going to get all depressed or but because there's always a but. We'll see, possibly Monday. We'll see if our side has the same, what would you call it, missionary zeal as the dead ferret patrol did. Again, a little program note, and I'll mention it again tomorrow. I will not be on the air Monday. I will be at the Moral Monday March on Mansion in Charleston, West Virginia. Agnes said she'll be back here at the board. I'm not going to carry a whole bunch. I'm not going to carry a big load of broadcast equipment with me, but I may try to call in to the program. And if I can, I will, especially if I can get decent audio of the remarks made by people like Reverend Barber. So, anyway, I'm really curious to see how many people will show up. I hope a lot, because it is vitally important. Maggots at the town hall. Steve adds, I'm going to guess without hearing a word, the subject's critical race theory. Trump won, Hunter Biden. Well, it's fuck Biden, and it's Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. But you've got the basic flavor of things. Kyle, with a note, right-wingers, left-wingers is indoctrinating all the children to the radical, socialist, fascist, communist, gay, BLM, one world government agenda. Leave them out of it. Also right-wingers, parade around children in costumes and make them burn masks as part of their bullshit conspiracies. You too, seem to have the tenor of the zeitgeist, Kyle. Yeah, I know. Irish Dave, some say those ferrets are just sleeping and not really dead. They're dead ferrets. They're pining for the fjords. They're former ferrets. They're ferrets singing in the bloody quarry tunnel. Yeah. Oh, and Robin. Bruce Beach. On April 27th, the California State Senate Subcommittee passed a bill to return oceanfront real estate stolen from a black couple by white city officials in 1924 to the living descendants of its original owners. The Bruce family had left New Mexico in the early 1900s and headed for California. Yes, the Bruce family would have headed for Beverly, but Jed Clampett was already there, and the Bruces did not care to be neighbors with a crazy white man wearing a huge hat carrying a gun by the name of Jed, a crazy-looking Donald Trump Jr. clone by the name of Jethro, and his sister Ellie Ivanka May. So the Bruce family decided to forego Beverly Hills and headed for Manhattan. Manhattan Beach, that is. In 1912, the Bruce family purchased a plot of land for $1,225. That's a lot of money in 1912. About $612,000 in modern money. They then opened a seaside resort exclusively for black clientele. And as the Bruce's Lodge gained popularity, white terror eventually followed. Black visitors' tires were slashed. Phony 10-minute-only parking signs were erected. And the Ku Klux Klan set fire on the Bruce's property and burned a cross near their house. In 1915, city cracker clerk Llewellyn Price complained that the Bruces had held a coon picnic. I regret even reading that phrase, which he stated was a detriment to the neighborhood. The Bruces were endlessly harassed and ultimately driven off their land by the Manhattan Beach Board of Trustees through eminent domain in 1924. City officials stated that the building of a park was a necessity. Really, a park needed to be built? Usually eminent domain involves the building of a highway or something of major importance, not a park. As it turned out, that plot of land sat dormant for nearly three decades. The Bruces sued and managed to receive a settlement of $14,500, and most of the money for that went to the lawyers in fighting eviction. The Bruces left California destitute in 1929. The Bruces, Willa and Charles, both died about 7 years later from post-traumatic stress and being terrorized by the KKK after having their livelihood ripped away from them. A member of the board who effectively stole Bruce's land, one Frank Daugherty, wrote in 1945 that white residents believed the Negro problem was going to stop our progress. I always felt that it was a mean trick to make them leave their homes, but it was the only way out. Now, a certain giraffe asking, what the hell exactly is a Negro problem? What is that? Can someone define that for me, please? As a high-minded giraffe, I was wondering exactly what that involves. Jeffrey asks some good questions. Well, the experience that the Bruce family weathered still happens today. In 2001, the Associated Press in an investigation found that 406 black landowners, through unscrupulous legal means and white terror, lost more than 24,000 acres that are today owned by white corporations and worth tens of millions of dollars. The land that was stolen from the Bruces today is worth about $50 million, and the grandson of Willa and Charles, Bernard Bruce, tried to get the land back but died at the age of 86 of COVID. This year. His efforts were bolstered by Mitch Ward, the city's first black elected legislator, who authored legislation to have the beach renamed Bruce's Beach. However, efforts may be stalled because Manhattan Beach has only 1% black population, and cracker council members like Joe Franklin think that no member living in Manhattan Beach is now responsible for the racist actions of 100 years ago, even though, you know, they're profiting by them. So Jeffrey's going to wrap things up.
Well, Joe Franklin, let me be frank with you. His attitude such as yours will only further the rancor and division between the races.
And there aren't even races. Races is not a real thing. There's no such thing as race.
As far as I'm concerned, the use of eminent domain in the Bruce's case was an absolute fraud and theft of their property. They deserve to have their land returned to them, and so do many others in this country, most notably Native Americans. And we wonder why Tracy and Encino speaks endlessly of her frustration regarding the plight of the of black people every time she calls in.
Well, it's not every time. And it's damned well warranted. Over the years, African Americans have lost billions of dollars in wealth thanks to redlining and steering, two real estate legal terms that bankers and lenders have used to be a thorn in the side of the black population. When does it end? So this has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 10th day of June, with Giraffe redlining the red hat Trump bigots into a section of the city called Oblivion. And there's a $10 red line the red hats challenge on the table. So it would be nice to get off the $900 schneid because, well, tomorrow's going to be terrifying. No, thanks, Joey, and thanks, Giraffe. Steve in New York says, I'm going to take some issue with the comparison of the Clampets to the Trumps. Simple as they may have seemed, there was not the vitriolic behavior or propensity to cheating with them. They would frequently let people swim in the cement pond and were willing to defend the coast from invasion of the Grunions. Good folks. Hillbillies often are. Yeah, that's the whole point of the program. The hillbillies weren't the butt of the jokes. They were the actual good people. I was going to take issue, too, but, well, Steve handled it for me. My pledge, Steve adds, I pledge to no longer ask what is wrong with Trump voters. Ask how they don't see it. Lament how certain religious folks can see things so differently than my parish taught me. Give them any bit of the benefit of the doubt or work to understand them. I will now take it as given that they are irredeemable, that they are not worth listening to, that they are not worth speaking to. I'll just work to make my country better, even when those improvements positively affect the maggots and probably will never, who will probably never realize it or know it. It's probably the best course. That's something that was put forward years and years and years and years ago now by our dear friend Revervo, the human boy, who said, you know, we've been sitting here at this bus stop with the gatefold door open, waiting for him to get on and go into the future with us. Sooner or later, we just have to close the door and leave and go without them.
and that's probably the best policy. And, you know, in a way, that's a manifestation of what we're saying on our side relative to, you know, the obstructionism and general pissantiness of the white wing in this country. You know, if Democrats in the House and Senate, let's get good procedure here. If the House introduced a bill giving free ice cream, a free scoop of ice cream every day to every child in America, and it passed, in the democratically controlled House, and then it went to the Senate, we would find that Joe Manchin would not support it because there are no Republicans who will support a free cone of ice cream for every child in America every day of the year. And they'd come up with any number of bullshit excuses. Well, what about the children with milk allergies? Okay, we'll give them some ice cream made out of all coconut milk. Nope, not good enough. If a resolution was passed in the House praising firefighters who rescue kitty cats who are up trees, and it went to the Senate, Joe Manchin would not support it because he wouldn't be able to find a Republican, 10 Republicans, who would also get on board with the resolution praising firefighters who rescue kitty cats from trees. So it then becomes a matter of figuring out why no Republicans will support a bill that rescues praising firefighters for rescuing kitty cats from trees. It's not because ice cream or rescuing kitty cats are bad things. It is because the Republican Party has no interest in governing and has no interest in the well-being of the American people. I know that sounds simplistic, but it's fucking true. They would never put forward a resolution praising firefighters for rescuing kitty cats from trees, because that would suggest that government is capable of accomplishing something, anything, doing something positive that everybody can rally around. And the last thing the Republican Party needs is everybody rallying around, because if we were to figure out that we can get together on stuff, then again, what's left for the Republican Party? Not bloody much. And then they just wither and die. Well, they don't wither and die. There's some nasty nationalist rump party that relies on anti-democratic principles to remain in power in places like Alabama and Texas replaces it. Yo, wait, isn't that where we already are? Because we have had a past in which Republicans famously reached across the aisle to Democrats, and Democrats famously reached across the aisle to Republicans, and they famously came up with half-hearted legislation that wouldn't completely screw the American people, just partially screw. But those days are past. And the Republican Party has been replaced by a rump white nationalist party that can only succeed by struggling to keep a nation hopelessly divided. Oh, well, that explains the ice cream. Kyle says, you're giving away free stuff again. That's socialism. I get your point, though. Manchin's paid for by the fucking Cokes, and he's a damn Republican. Well, and you know, that's the difficult part, because he has put the lie to his own position by supporting bills that were partisan. He's done it in the past. It's just that it's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is not the same as your local Chamber of Commerce. Your local Chamber of Commerce is made up of insurance salesmen and
bankers and the like. And yes, they take conservative positions. They take pro-money positions. But they're not entirely insane. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is just a great big money laundering operation. And they have, in the recent past, after having taken a bit of a powder on it, started giving money to Joe Manchin again. And apparently the check clears. And here we are. Yeah. Thanks, Con. Yeah, what they've got left, Randy and PA points out, is bathroom bills, potty bills. Yeah. And they come back with them and back with them and back with them and back with them. And they come up with a devil du jour. And they really are running out. When you're when the party that loves the precious little fetuses when they're down to attacking children for their gender and their gender expression, well, it's really not going to be long before they are attacking precious little kitty cats up trees and crying in fear and needing a fire department to come and bring the hook and ladder and rescue them. Makes you wonder where we're headed, or at least fearful for where we're headed. Lee in New York says, "Oh, Robin, Republicans will support a resolution to praise firefighters for rescuing cats from trees. It only requires a Republican president, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate. That way, Republicans can praise themselves louder than they praise the firefighters." Yeah, and they will happily praise as long as they don't have to provide any money. Sure. I stand corrected. Okay, I'm sitting, but you get the point. I guarantee you, Steve in New York says, if the Democrats introduced a resolution to praise the firefighters who rescued baby Jessica on October 16, 1987, on the 35th anniversary of her rescue on October 16, 2022, the GOP would vote against it. Yeah, it was a lot funnier when Groucho Marx sang, "Whatever it is you're for, I'm against it." It's not quite so funny in this context. Okay, Robin, says Lamar the Magnificent. Get Louis Gohmert, aged out of K through 12 grades. I wanted to say, if we change the Earth orbit, would we change the climate? No shit. We learn at my third grade class in public school. Explain to us, would we drift into space? Could Gohmert be one of those who don't need no schooling? I don't need none of that fancy education. You know, it just amazes me every time I hear his stupidity. That man sat in judgment of people's lives. I think on the Court of Criminal Appeals in the state of Texas. That is a dry, 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 dry bottom of a pickle barrel that they scraped him out of. Oh, dear, dear Lee, Steve says, those kitty cats should pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and get out of the damn tree themselves. Lay about, kitty cats! Got a link, Flavio. Merrick Garland's going after ProPublica now. I see a pattern. Yeah. But hey, Joe Biden's in Europe. And he has been noted on my filthy morning habit today. I heard he has more foreign policy experience since any president. More foreign policy experience of any president since George H.W. Bush, and I about spit out my yogurt, which is not a pretty sight. In fact, it may be gross enough that I may have just ruined dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Since George H.W. Bush, foreign policy experience. Yeah. Sure. I mean, if foreign policy experience includes fucking a bunch of American hostages held in Iran to keep them held hostage longer so that old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, can become president. Well, sure, why not?
just why not? Foreign policy experts. And I neglected some good news yesterday. And it's extremely good news. Once upon a time, the company called themselves TransCanada, but now that brand name is mud, the Canadian corporation rebranded itself to TC Energy A. And as of yesterday, they gave up on the Keystone XL pipeline project. This is a win for groups that take as their first mission protecting human and environmental rights. They're going to wrap things up, TC Energy says. They're going to work with regulators and indigenous groups and other stakeholders to meet its environmental and regulatory commitments and ensure a safe termination of an exit from the project. They even put that in a press release. And this is because the Biden administration rescinded a permit from the pipeline and did it on President Biden's very first day in office back in January. First they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Wouldn't it be awesome to see something like that happen with the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act? Wouldn't it be just grand to see the AIC Act sweep through the House and by some miracle get through the Senate? At the heyday of their ballyhooing of this toxic funnel of filth, TC Energy said they were going to transport up to 830,000 barrels of oil a day from the Alberta tar sands hellscape to Nebraska. Then they'd go through an existing system to refineries and on the Texas coast. Don't know if you heard, you're hearing that in the background, but that's thunder. It's, you know, warm weather here in Appalachia, and that means thunderstorms are possible. And so just a general warning, or advisory, not a warning, an advisory that if this program should suddenly disappear, it will be because the thunder has scared the daylights out of the internet connection, and our internet connection has run and hid under the bed. Mm-hmm. Oh, and TC Energy, little known fun fact, Brother Deacon Asa makes us aware of. TC Energy of Canada is owned to the tune of 40% by the Cokes. It's owned 40% by Chuck Coke and by and also by the by dead Dave Coke's heirs and assigns forever. Mm-hmm. Funny how that happened. And at one point in time, one of the big talking points was that the Keystone XL pipeline, well, it'll create 42,000 bajillion million trillion jobs. But those were only during the construction phase. It's kind of curious when you take into account that, the State Department said, yeah, 42,000 jobs, sure. But what does it say about the viability of a pipeline when it takes 42,000 people to build it, but in terms of permanent jobs after it's built, there were only going to be 35? There are only going to be 35 permanent jobs to maintain the pipeline, which we know from the engineering, it was not a matter of when it, not a matter of if it leaked, but when it leaked, because it was going to leak. And when you're moving 830,000 barrels, which is actually a term of measurement in the oil industry, when you're moving 830,000 barrels of oil through a pipeline every 24-hour period, if you get a leak in that, it, you know, I mean, it's a leak, right? You know how it is with a leak. Yeah, a little bit here, a little bit of a mess. Clean it up. No. A leak in an 830,000 barrels per day, I mean, what? Okay, I am not going to do this on the fly. Let's see here. 830,000 divide by 24. That's 34,583 barrels per hour. Divide by 60. That's 576 barrels per minute. Let's divide by 60 again. That's 9.6 barrels per second. That's a lot of oil. That, I mean, you know, just a little leak. And then, of course, there was nothing in there about what would happen when it blew up. Because that happens, too. So, no. It's not going to happen. Yay, it's a win. Hooray. Hallelujah. Yeah. But every, you know, there's a cloud to every silver lining. And the province of Alberta issued a statement, too, saying, we'll explore all options to recoup the government's investment in the pipeline. Well, the government had no business investing in the pipeline, but they did anyway. But the Alberta government, because it apparently is comprised entirely of fossil fools, well, the Alberta government's out about $1.3 billion Canadian dollars. That's about $1.1 billion U.S. dollars. You gotta wonder who's going to pay for that. It'll probably be paid for in by you know the people who are least able to pay for it. Poor people. People who need things like health care. Yeah. And that's one of those moments where the Biden administration, on its first day in office, reversed the Trump administration. Nitwit Nero had blathered about gleaming new infrastructure. And it took him till early 2020 to reapprove the permit. And it's completely outside the ability of the fossil fools in the province of Alberta to realize that maybe there's a better way for Alberta to survive than to reduce millions of acres of provincial land, much of which is actually indigenous land, to a benighted hellscape that will never again be part of a viable ecosystem. Yeah. What's that? Steve in New York says, I am pissed at President Biden right now. However, I don't doubt that he really does have interest in my fellow citizens and me at the center of his actions. I also can look at this photo of him in Great Britain and see the genuineness of his and the First Lady's love, and as Oprah-ish as it may sound, their sincerity. Well, look, how much does he love his country that he's willing to be within within the reach of a 20-foot battle lance of Bojo? Yeesh. And by the way, because this is one of those things that we pay attention to now in Merca, First Lady Dr. Jill Biden had a message on the back of her jacket today as she visited in merry old England. You remember when Melanoma Trump, the first presidential spouse ever to remove her clothing in exchange for money for the sexual gratification of perfect strangers, remember when she wore that that ugly green jacket that said, "I really don't care, do you?" Well, Dr. Jill Biden, professional that she is still not above trolling Melanoma. First, it was the fact that she's going to get a Vogue cover, where for 4 years Vogue was like, "Nah, we don't need Melanoma on our cover, thanks." Well, Dr. Jill's going to be on it, but today her jacket simply bore one word: love. Love. Good for her. Even if it does feel a little bit like heady matters of state reduced to seventh grade. No, like I said, every silver lining has a cloud. And the only thing I worry about is that they're not going to stop the torment of the earth up in Alberta, and that filthy, revolting, disgusting tar sands extraction, which, by the way, the bitumen that's in it is highly corrosive, which is a bad thing for steel in pipelines or train cars. And it makes me wonder, and frankly worry, about whether or not this means more bomb trains. Because those things go boom real big. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, "Well, Robin, I say you'd have to balance the deaths caused by the pipeline with those 35 jobs, as a certain senator said." Yeah. And for those who want to carry the cipher in further, Randy in PA points out a barrel of oil as a unit of measurement is only 40 gallons, not the 55 gallons that one might otherwise assume. Lee in New York says I should give myself a cowbell for the barrels of oil calculations. No, because I said I wasn't going to do it on the fly. I cheated, and I used my handy-dandy calculator machine. Yeah. Wait, what? Says Kyle, who is certainly not accustomed to good news. What's that? What's the catch? When does the other shoe drop? This is outstanding. And finally, pressure actually worked for once. Now we can just get the AIC Act passed. Exactly. And it's not just one win. There was a win the other day when President Biden's administration pulled the plug on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge drilling.
Fuck those elk. And the caribou, and the buffaloes, and the ferrets. Fuck the ferrets. The ferrets died!
I know. Devoutly to be wished, Randy. Randy in PA says, with the end of the Keystone XL pipeline, are the Republican chumps going to try to stop breathing air in order to own the libtards? Do please. But don't fill up barrels of oil with tannerite and then shoot the barrels to blow.
Oh, they'd do it. They'd do it. No, look, I know what the next talking point's going to be. You know what the next... You know what? Joe Biden done killed 42,000 jobs forever in America under God, amen. He hates working peoples. Because I've already heard it. Those people needed those pipeline jobs. Yeah, those people needed those pipeline jobs more than, you know, we need to... have a livable planet. It's like Tracy says, sometimes it's exhausting. Because it does. So once again, we have gotten through the first hour of the program. And by the way, I should let you know that lo and behold, shortly after the program ended yesterday, I got all of the notifications, you know, all three of them, for folks who chipped in during the program. I did just check PayPal. We've gotten through the first hour of the program, and we have a goose egg with $900 to raise. And it would be great. It would be so great if we could, you know, get off the schneid with that. And we will see. And, of course, it is a Thursday, and that means we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to it. Hope you do, too. So as the thunder rolls through, and as I watch nervously the lights on the modem to see if we've still got the interweb tubes with us, we will... go to the Green News Report. A couple of notes, Steve in New York. First Lady Biden's jacket, that was squarely aimed at Pride Month, the motto that emerged after the U.S. Supreme Court marriage equality was Love Wins Out. Yep, there it went. There went the power. Told ya. I should know better. Okay, it's back. Usually this happens in threes. Thank you very much, Jeremy. Just met Joey and Giraffe's challenge. The redlining the red hats challenge. Dr. Biden's jacket, predicting the right-wing outrage. Lee in New York says, Joe Biden wore a jacket with a four-letter word on it. Yeah, words are an abomination. This month. Well, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy says, give yourself a cowbell for standing your ground and not accepting a cowbell for your gas math on the fly since you cheated with your calculator. It's getting too complicated. And there's Brother Deacon Asa. Well, fuck, I was just about to tell you how there's been no buffering this evening. Yeah, that ship sailed right quick, didn't it? And just because you weren't wondering, I keep being correct about this. We have a new statement from Nitwit Nero.
As president, I had a great and very productive meeting in Helsinki, Finland, with President Putin of Russia that nobody else was allowed to attend, not even my own translator. Despite the belated fake news portrayal of the meeting.
Belated?
The United States won much, including the respect of President Putin and Russia. Because of the phony Russia, Russia, Russia hoax made up and paid for by the Democrats and crooked Hillary Clinton, the United States was put at a disadvantage that was nevertheless overcome by me. As to who do I trust, they asked, Russia or our intelligence from the Obama era, meaning people like Comey, McCabe, and the two lovers, Brennan Clapper, and numerous other sleazebags, or Russia. The answer after all that has been found out and written should be obvious. Russia. Our government has rarely had such lowlifes as these working for it. Good luck to Biden dealing with President Putin. Don't fall asleep during the meeting, and please give him my warmest regards. Jesus Christ! Please don't ask him. Please not to send his kneecappers after me for the bad debt, because I'm still trying to pay for it because I'm fucking broke. Yeah, I know.
Thank you, Samson. Thank you so much. We're talking about getting off the schneid. Thank you so much. We are down to 780. That's amazing. 780. So we're finished with Monday's fundraising. That's wonderful. We're into Tuesday. $180 away from being done with Tuesday. Thank you so much. Okay, so like I said, the power outage is coming threes. And that was me knocking wood, because even though I'm not superstitious, I am. We're dealing with a coal-fried antique electric grid. I'll take any advantage I can get. And this is a conversation radio program. If you want to get involved with it, you know how to reach the program via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. The stress line is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And you're welcome to... You're welcome to jump in on it, but for now, let's see what Brad and Desi have.
It's Thursday, June 10, 2021.
The Keystone XL crude oil pipeline is done. It's canceled.
Finally, a hard-won victory for tribes and environmentalists as massive controversial tar sands pipeline is finally dead. Mass arrests at Line 3 pipeline protest in Minnesota, plus Biden's infrastructure talks with Republicans collapse and start all over again.
All of that good news and bad straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I would have thought Trump would be a huge fan of Bitcoin. I mean, it's a way to both hide dirty money and destroy the environment at the same time. What's not to like?
Sounds about right. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so the 13-year dream of a massive 1,200-mile pipeline to ship 830,000 barrels of dirty tar sands oil each day from Alberta, Canada, to refineries in Texas for shipping overseas amid catastrophically dangerous global warming due to the burning of fossil fuels is now, what? Officially canceled?
Oh my, yes it is. The on-again, off-again, zombie-like Keystone XL pipeline has been officially nixed by its own Canadian developer, TC Energy, after the Biden administration declined to renew its cross-border permit.
Are you sure it's dead? Is it really dead this time? Because I've heard time and time again this thing is dead, and then it comes back to life like Freddy Krueger.
Yes, it appears to be really dead. It had originally been canceled by President Obama, then revived by President Trump. This marks a big victory for environmental groups, tribes, and landowners across the route who fought for more than 13 years to stop the project, arguing that the dirty tar sands oil it would carry posed an unacceptable risk to drinking water supplies and the environment and would worsen the climate crisis. TC Energy, formerly TransCanada, said that it would coordinate with regulators, stakeholders, and indigenous groups to ensure a safe exit from the project.
And if there's anything I associate with TC Energy, it's safety.
Meanwhile, in Minnesota this week, police arrested hundreds of protesters blocking construction on the controversial Line 3 pipeline, owned and operated by spill-plagued pipeline company Enbridge. Like the Keystone XL, Line 3 would transport heavy tar sands oil from Canada into the U.S. Native American tribes and environmental groups argue the pipeline isn't needed. It threatens hundreds of miles of the state's delicate watersheds and drinking supplies, violates tribal sovereignty and contributes to man-made global warming. In operation, Line 3 Pipeline's annual emissions are projected to be equal to 45 coal-fired power plants. In Washington, President Joe Biden has ended lengthy negotiations with West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito over his infrastructure jobs proposal after Republicans refused to budge substantially on its scope and funding mechanisms. Biden now turns to negotiating with a different group of both Democrats and Republicans. But as Brad has noted in a recent broadcast, Republican Senator Roy Blunt kind of gave away the game on Meet the Press, letting slip that Republicans have no intention of voting for any Biden infrastructure jobs package because they're planning to run against it in the crucial 2022 midterm elections.
The Biden agenda is an agenda that Republicans are going to be talking about, defining themselves based on our differences on things like what is infrastructure.
Yes, of course. If they're going to be running on what is infrastructure in 2022, I kind of doubt they're going to pass an infrastructure bill in 2021.
As we go to air, President Biden is on the first foreign trip of his presidency, joining the G7 summit of the world's seven largest economies. Last month, those G7 countries, the UK, US, Canada, Italy, France, Germany, and Japan, all committed to ending financing of new coal power plants around the world, part of their pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change. However, a new analysis finds that in the last year, those same G7 countries committed $50 billion more to new fossil fuel projects than to clean energy projects, spending just $150 billion on clean energy versus nearly $200 billion to finance oil, coal, and gas development.
Not good.
But some good news. The Biden administration has begun the legal process to repeal a Trump-era rule that ended federal protections for hundreds of thousands of small streams, wetlands, and waterways that provide drinking water for millions of Americans. The Trump rollback would have opened up the waterways to pollution from development, industry, and agriculture. And finally, Maine has become the first state legislature in the United States to pass a fossil fuel divestment bill, directing its $17 billion pension fund and state treasury to divest from coal, oil, and gas investments. It is a major victory for climate justice groups.
We'll take all of the victories we can get, especially the end of the Keystone XL pipeline.
Indeed.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, okay, that's a little Roy Orbison never heard anything, right? Yeah, and so the power has managed to stay on again with the knocking wood, and we're into the second hour of the program, now only $780 away from fully funding the first full week of the broadcast in June. Remember, June started on a Tuesday, and after all, this is now at least on the QAnon calendar, it's a 31-day month. Let's see, where else? Where to go? The Merrick Garland thing. Flavio says, Attorney General Merrick Garland told lawmakers that investigating the source of a massive leak of taxpayer information behind an article by ProPublica will be one of his top priorities. I promise you it will be at the top of my list, he assured Senator Susan Collins of Maine. Yeah. The article that ProPublica published revealed that in some recent years, billionaires such as Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, Tesla CEO Elon Musk, and businessman Michael Bloomberg, Carl Icahn, George Soros paid no federal income taxes. Well, we've got to find out. Yeah, like Flavio says, a disturbing pattern emerges. Sheesh. And that was from a hearing yesterday. And you know, the ProPublica article was huge. Responding to Susan Collins, Attorney General Garland said, "Senator, I take this as seriously as you do. I very well remember what President Nixon did in the Watergate period, the creation of enemies lists and the punishment of people through reviewing their tax returns. This is an extremely serious matter. People are entitled, obviously, to great privacy with respect to their tax returns." And it's only gonna get hotter, though, because it was just the ProPublica article. The report was just the first in a series. And no, they did not reveal their sources. And I have a feeling that they will stand on that journalistic principle, because ProPublica does good work. And they published a separate article explaining why they made the revelations that they did. But the IRS is now investigating ProPublica, too. Huh? ProPublica got that information. Maybe the second article will be on Trump. And then Merrick Garland can defend Trump's tax records, too. This is... No, I'm trying not to be some member of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol. But that's... disturbing, to say the least. Merrick Garland probably should not have referenced Nixon's enemies list, because it sounds like he's by pursuing journalism organizations. It sounds like he's behaving like a guy with a Nixonian enemies list, right? Man, let's run over and see who's on the phone. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay, you apparently have I can't even tell who this is. You apparently have a terrible connection. You want to try again?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I heard you this time. Maybe it's going to settle down. Who have I got? Okay. Oh, let's see if they call back. Haven't had a bad connection like that in some time. Of course, there's a thunderstorm going on. Oh, it was from the Bay Area. Well, by all means, do try again. Let's see. Wow. Brother Deacon Asa hit me to this one. You know the Trump Hotel in Vancouver went bankrupt, I presume. Yeah, well, before it did, it became what is being described as a hotbed for criminal activity. Naturally, Merrick Garland had nothing to say, because that was in Canoodley. The Trump International Hotel and Tower had a joint in it called the Ivy Rosé Lounge. Really? Ivy Rosé? Who names this shit? And it was billed as an unparalleled entertainment. We'll use Jeffrey's voice for this. An unparalleled entertainment experience every weekend. Come indulge in our gourmet food menu, craft cocktails, and decor while we ensure the highest level of safety and social distancing. Well, it was. It was a skeevy, nasty criminal enterprise. It had received, according to police, Vancouver police, back in February, said they'd responded to 43 calls related to the Ivy since June of last year, including two involving weapons, four public health breaches, two fights, and two assaults. And the police told management that the Ivy was a preferred destination for gang members and people involved in organized crime. Really? A Trump organization? A Trump property? A haven for organized crime? No. Really? It went bankrupt in August of 2020. And they shut it down. And then the litigation began. And as the National Post up in Canada reported, there was another less savory side to the bar. Police showed up repeatedly to respond to fights and other disturbances. COVID rules were routinely flouted. And in the few months after the Ivy opened last year, it became a known hangout for the city's organized crime figures. There were even hidden cameras to warn staff when police or bylaw enforcement were headed their way. The judge in the case, British Columbia Supreme Court Judge Gordon Wetherill, said it takes no more than a modicum of common sense to recognize that Ivy's ongoing, repeated, and flagrant disregard of public health orders, liquor restrictions, as well as its apparent indifference, to put it at its most generous, towards the clientele it allowed to frequent the licensed area, would negatively affect the reputation of the property and the hotel. Yeah, it's another one of those skeevy places Trump didn't really care about, because all that mattered to him was that he sold them the right to use his name. He sold TA Hotel Management of Malaysia the right to use his name. Here's the audio from their promo video. Young couple walking through an empty bar, lots of glass, women dancing, tattooed bartenders. Oh, Jeebus Cripes. Steven, New York says, nothing tacky here. Ooh, Dom Perignon. Ooh, they had a DJ and everything. Oh, the stuff I miss. But, you know, like I said, they also had public safety, public health violations. It was a skeevy den of disease transmission. It wasn't the Ivy Rosé. It was Club COVID. Because, of course. Nice. Speaking of promos, there's a movie coming out. And, yeah, I confess I might be interested in seeing this in a really tacky sort of way. The film will feature Andrew Garfield and Jessica Chastain. And the name of the film is The Eyes of Tammy Faye, about the rise and fall of the Jim and Tammy PTL empire. The publication Vulture said, the hair and makeup in this movie serve the same role as the plant in Little Shop of Horrors. Feed me, Seymour. It's an impressive special effect that keeps growing and growing until it becomes a character of its own. Oh, God. And Hemant Mehta, writing over at Friendly Atheist, says, if the giant buckets of food don't make an appearance, this movie will be dead to me. Well, no, Hemant, my friend, the bucket pudding didn't come along until the resurrection of Jim Baker, long after Tammy Faye's demise. And you know, Tammy Faye gets a little bit of a break because, you know, she famously embraced the LGBTQ community later in life. But she was part of the scam too. She was in on it. And the best part of it all, there's a trailer.
Tammy Faye, what'd you do?
Hello, Mother. This is Jim Baker, my husband.
It's all part of our mission to help people. Anyone who's hurting or they feel like they've been left out, God has a plan for us.
What'd he tell you to do this time?
Jesus keeps a taking me higher and higher.
Jim will preach, and I'll sing.
Higher, higher. God does not want us to be poor.
Mr. Fowler, a pleasure.
Now God has a voice in this fight.
Who's he fighting?
Liberal agenda, homosexual agenda.
Faith isn't political.
You can't talk to him like that. Jerry Falwell is a powerful man, Tammy Faye.
She's a firecracker, Jim.
If everyone watching could double their pledge just for 1 month, God loves you. He really does.
We're not doing anything wrong, though.
Is that a question?
Tammy and I are undergoing the most vicious attacks.
Serving God don't feel like it should be a money-making opportunity.
You know, when I saw that clipping with my face on it, I thought for a second that you were proud of me.
Oh, Tammy Faye, you follow blindly. In the end, all you are is blind. These
eyes. I just want to love people. Cry
every night. The devil's coming for me, Tammy.
Can we talk about Satan later, Jim?
Steve is a patient of AIDS.
I can't look at this. You need to get her under control.
I built you an empire.
You built you an empire.
Some people, they're just hurting so bad, and we just need to love them.
I want to put my arm around you.
And I want to put my arms around you, Tammy Faye.
Go for it, looking in the rear view mirror of my life.
This is who I am.
Okay, I confess, I'm probably going to watch this. If for no other reason than, well, it looks kind of campy and fun, and hopefully, well, I guess there's only so much time in a film. They won't be able to include the great ad by Larry Flint, about the parody ad about Jerry Falwell's first time. No. Oh, and Jerry Jr. is back in court. He's claiming that the board of Jerry Falwell University, or whatever the name of that place is being fad, being mean, and making him all sad by talking about the fact that, well, he's Cucky Jerry. All right, dear. Agnes says you'll be watching that by yourself. The Eyes of Tammy Faye. You should have come back here and seen that the woman playing Tammy Faye has an Academy Award, so. Well, there's Tammy Faye. And then there's, because this qualifies as Thorn in the Side Thursday material. Then there's Kate Jenner. She showed up on The View today. That must have been a real blast. And among other things, Sonny Hostin took her to task for hiring a bunch of Trump cronies in her skeevy gubernatorial campaign. Naturally, of course, there's a soundbite.
Of Republicans in this country believe that Donald Trump won the election and not Joe Biden. Are you one of those people, one of those Republicans?
I'm not going to get into that. That election is over with. I think Donald Trump did do some good things. And what I liked about Donald Trump is he was a disruptor.
But did he win the election?
But he was a disruptor when he was president. I want to do the same thing. I want to go in and be a thoughtful disruptor in Sacramento. We need to change the system, and I want to change that system for the
public. Oh, who
booked
her? A lot
of Republicans in this country believe that Donald Trump won the election and not Joe Biden. Are you one of those people, one of those Republicans?
My God. I'm not going, because, see, she can't say Joe Biden won the election, because then whatever tattered remains there are of her hopes to somehow replace Governor Gavin Newsom are done. And she needs the dead ferret patrol up there in Marin County to have any hope at all. I'm an outsider, she says. Well, I mean, I guess she was outside of her house when she was sitting in her hangar being interviewed and complaining about how disgusting it is to have to look at the homeless people. She also said that she was going to woke the woke. She didn't say it in this particular conversation. She's going to woke the woke and cancel culture. What an idiot. But among other things, it was Sonny Hostin who brought out the fact that, you know, she hired Brad Parscale. We talked about that on this program. Brad Parscale, who managed to scam Donald Trump and then got dumped for it. Remember when he was carried away by the police and came out of the house, no shirt on, and he's board shorts and flip-flops. And so what if I'm waving a gun around? It's my right. Mm-hmm. Well, she also hired Caroline Wren, who was canned by the MAGOT campaign. And she's one of the central organizers, how about that, of the January 6th insurrection and attack on the Capitol of the United States. Her poll numbers are hovering somewhere around 6%, but she'll find a way to make money off of it. Because that's all this has ever been, is a skeevy little fundraising dodge. Ugh. Ugh. And, of course, the fact that she wants to set up a commission to determine who's really trans. Groovy Kate, let's start with you. Nasty. Oh, well. She'll find another dodge sometime soon. I know. Stephen, New York, Walter Sobchak was a prophet when he said, yeah, but he's a pervert, dude. Oh, he was speaking prophetically about Jerry Falwell Jr. Yeah, but he's a pervert, dude. The way that line is delivered. Mm-hmm. as to the film, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Jeremy in Vermont says, I really hope they can tie this Tammy Faye pick into the start of Breaking Bad. What? It would kind of work. Sounds like he's got a fantastic soundtrack. Steve adds, and to think, so many years ago, this was the man who adorned Wheaties boxes across the fruited plain and was held up as an athlete and person for kids to emulate everywhere. Yeah, I guess Wheaties can't rescind a cereal box cover. Probably that's probably a sleeping dog that's best let lie. But it really is about time for ESPN to call that. What was she, the sports person of the year or something equally stupid? Yeah, it's time for that. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Using these eyes. Dave number 11 said, and Burton Cummings gets paid. Yes. Great song, too. Matt in San Francisco, a little curious. Disruptors? So now it's a strength to disrupt everything because you have no idea what you're doing due to being an idiot? Well, an idiot would say that, Matt, and she did. Of course, you know, obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. I saw Disruptor, and I thought about the little pistols that Klingons carry. Earther noting, I'm a thoughtful neo-Nazi arsonist Disruptor. Precisely. Okay, question time. I haven't seen it. A while back, you said you'd never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show sequel. Well, here's a link. Let me know what you think. Hey, could we watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show sequel tonight? Okay, I got an oh yeah from Agnes, so we're good. Thank you, Ron. P.S., Ron asks, and I'll answer any question I possibly can, is a trans woman who likes women gay? She's a lesbian. Yes. I'd really sincerely like to know. Yes. It can get very confusing very quickly. For instance, let's say you start out as a gay guy and you're involved with guys and you transition and you find yourself still into guys. Guess what? You're straight. If you were straight and transition, you know, straight as a guy and like girls, and you transition, and you still like girls, ding, you're a lesbian. And then it just keeps getting interestinger. Mm-hmm. I beg your pardon, dear? No, it is not twisted, dear. There's nothing twisted. It's... Okay, yeah. I get your point, dear. What? Uh-huh, yeah, I know. Caitlin's View, Jack in Shreveport says, yeah, I'm among those who saw The View this morning. Weasel words were used as a primary defense. Jack! This program has a certain currency. Those were not weasel words this morning. As it turns out, they were ferret words. All the ferrets died! Them's fake ferrets! No, not at all. Not at all, Steve. Agnes has been upset about the Wheaties box for a while now. Hold on a sec there, Steve says. So trans folks get two letters? That's just not fair. Well, I know, but to transition, we have to get like five letters. So, you know, it's only fair that we get a little, you know, it's like the buyback in a bar. Ugh, the letters. Gatekeeping. Those flaming barbed wire hoops that Scott in San Diego has talked about. Oh, and back to the ProPublica article. Darlene in Connecticut says, the article clearly shows that the likes of Warren Buffett is as full of shit as the rest of them. Even in light of all that press around his secretary paying more than he did in taxes. What did Buffett say when this came out? Well, what his ilk all say. That what he did was totally legal, blah, blah, blah. And tax avoidance is legal. It's not the same thing as tax evasion. You're merely using the laws that the Congress writes that are written for the benefit of people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. You're using a tool in the manner with which the tool was designed. The question is getting people into the Congress who will create a new set of tools more beneficial to the likes of, you know, the people who carry this country on their backs. The other day, Ben Burch was positing a notion saying, you know, that we should just have a $5,000 tax credit for everybody who gets the vaccine, and this country would be vaccinated yesterday, fully vaccinated. And it makes perfectly good sense, Ben's idea. But it would be taken up, and it would go all the way to the Supreme Court, and, you know, the six religious maniacs on the court would have a sad, and it would be unconstitutional. Anyway, Darlene in Connecticut continues and says, so now, for sure, I don't believe him when he said he was not leaving anything to his kids and they needed to build their own wealth. BS. I felt it was suspect back then anyway. You know, the best way to get a handle on so many of these billionaire tax dodges is to go way, way, way back in time. God, I think it may have been the 90s, late 90s, early aughts. And there's a book called Perfectly Legal by David K. Johnston. And he talks about all of these family trusts that were set up to evade wealth taxation. And it's all right there. And not much of it's been changed. It's the kind of stuff that propelled Elizabeth Warren to fame and notoriety, and justifiably so, for pointing that shit, you know, for making a big deal about that shit. That's why people like Bill Gates created the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I wonder if it's still going to be the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Or is it going to be the Bill and whoever he's dating now foundation? Or maybe it'll be the Bill Gates 5G liquid barcode foundation. Oh, I can't believe it. And as much, Darlene says, as I have a love-hate perspective on Elon Musk, at least I can credit him for paying the most in taxes out of all the billionaires. And that still isn't saying much. And Bezos wants to be catapulted into space. Gratitim ferocitare. I mean, when you're the richest of the rich, what else is left? You want to know something weird, Darlene and everybody else? I've recently seen photographs of Jeff Bezos and his Chrome Dome. I'm not being mean. And now he wants to go float around in the International Space Station. Look at him and then watch the Matthew McConaughey, Jodie Foster stars, film version of the Carl Sagan novel Contact. If you've never seen it, I mean, it's been out forever, but, you know, I don't want to spoil it. But there's a dude in the movie who's floating around in the International Space Station, and he's filthy fucking rich. And it's like Jeff Bezos right now traveled back in time to make that film. The likeness is eerie. Uh, Let me back up, and since I just walked over all over Darlene's line. And Bezos wants to be catapulted into space. Gratitim ferocitare. I mean, when you're the richest of the rich, what else is left? Mars! Not Elon Musk. Besides dick pics, I mean. Wait a minute, Darlene. I think it's also a bit of a life imitating art. Remember, yeah, I didn't get, I'm reading this cold. Remember the disabled billionaire who was like a cross between Stephen Hawking and, I don't know, some billionaire who was the patron of Dr. Ellie Arroway, played by Jodie Foster in the movie Contact? Yeah, show me a truly original idea. I should have read further down. But great minds, Darlene, great minds. Because it is. It's just wild. You see close-ups of Jeff Bezos now. It's like, no, that's the guy from Contact. Show me a truly original idea. And I know we like space stuff and everything. Another recommendation. We decided to watch it last night for want of anything else and started watching an anthology series on Amazon Prime called Solos. And we watched three episodes. And they're really neat because they're solos, because they are about, they're fairly short pieces, and they're each about a different character. And basically that character is the only person on screen. They are, in point of fact, extended monologues. Very well made. And every installment has a song associated with it. And we got three episodes in, and I was fading, and Agnes had already fallen asleep. Episode four this evening. But it's really good, really good. And there are connections between the characters. So, I know. Stop telling us what to watch on Amazon Prime, Robin. There, beat you to it. Stop telling us you'd beat us to it. But it's quite good. It's quite good. The mic is strong tonight, Jeremy says. We can hear Agnes through the wall tonight. Well, maybe it's the way I've got the mic pointed. Tammy Faye film, Christopher in Oregon. I'm assuming her movie will automatically win Best Makeup and Hair Award, Running Away. Did you have Dems? Did you have Dems fake boobs? Well, I'm not going to. I don't know. I think that's just one of those questions we ought not ask. Just like that, it should never have been said, but it turns out to have been a great little comedy bit for this program. Okay. Steve says it's like a buyback in a bar. I don't award cowbells very often, but that deserves one. Steve disagrees with the idea of tax credit for vaccines. I could not disagree more. I am never rewarding people for something they should do, especially when getting the vaccine is free. But what is it, Oregon or Washington State? I think it's Washington State. Joints for jabs. Go get your vaccine and get a doobie. Yeah, well, if I was unvaccinated, I'd maybe be more likely to take them up on it in Washington, here in West Virginia. I don't even. Are Agnes and I registered to win a free hunting rifle or a free shotgun in the vaccine lottery here? Because the $100 savings bond Dodge was such a not crowd pleaser. Lib Talker gives away plot point to Contact. Spoiler! Jeremy, how old is that movie? Randy in PA says, every family should set up a revocable trust if they can afford the lawyer's fees. It avoids a very expensive probate process. Well, it depends on how much the family has in assets. There's several ways to avoid that sort of thing. You can deal with your real property before death with something like a life estate in the real property and the remainder to whomever you wish to give it to, and that way it doesn't even pass through the will at all. Because like so many legal issues, they are controlled. You know, every law is different in every one of these little petty fiefdoms we call states. Taxes, Ron in Raleigh says, I'm sure that all those ne'er-do-wells that don't pay taxes while using the commons more than any of us proles yet don't want to pay for any of it. The only good thing Jeff Bezos gave us was an additional 2 seasons of The Expanse. Well, and credit where credit's due. Who knows? Maybe he really is working on what the plot was to Contact. I don't know. And McGovernor in South Carolina, according to David in South Carolina, says there's no need for a vaccination incentive in South Carolina. Our rate of vaccinated people is around 34%. Yeah, it's gonna run wild in places like South Carolina, Stan, and Alabama and Mississippi, Stan, because we got states' rights down here, and our states' rights, and because of states' rights, we ain't got to. We're gonna fire our cannons on the COVID vaccine. It may be China. And speaking of which, I started something. Brother Deacon Asa says regarding Jeff Bezos and Contact. This just goes to show that David Icke and Alex Jones were right about the alien lizard people all along. How else could a member of the Illuminati Rosicrucian billionaire class who runs the global banking system sneak back into a 1997 movie just to float around in space? Wake up, sheeple! It was a little bit ago that I got a news alert from, I think, the L.A. Times. Check here. And there it was again. Los Angeles Times. Why you should care about the coronavirus lab leak theory. Understanding the origins of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, is a linchpin for future pandemic prevention. Well, okay, yeah. How far do I have to go down into this news story, however? And I'm looking at it on the fly. Emily Baumgartner, writing for the Los Angeles Times, says, did the global pandemic seep from a truck bed crowded with animal cages on its way to market? A cave where villagers dig bat guano? Now, see here, Colonel Bat Guano, if that really is your name. A mislabeled vial in a Chinese coronavirus lab. Those theories have spun into a blame game at a geopolitical battleground. Yeah, ma'am, careful how you throw around that battleground business before it turns real and hot, with hot lead flying about. Yeah. For scientists, finding the original source is key to understanding how to predict, prevent, and contain future pandemics that may arise, whether from a leak at one of a growing number of pathogen labs or the accelerating encroachment of humans on the natural world. How is it that the possibility of a leak at a lab gets first billing behind humans encroaching on the natural world? Because in that whole Sherlock Holmes analysis scenario, where once you eliminate the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is the truth. Thank you, Spock. The human encroachment on the natural world seems to make a lot more sense. And so here we go. Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I'm counting real good, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and the story is over. 22 paragraphs, and not a single mention of the name Trump, not a single mention of him pulling our scientists out of China and sacking the scientists whose job was to monitor this kind of shit and keep it from and keep pandemics from getting out. Not a word. Well, I guess that wouldn't be fair, would it? I mean, it only killed 600,000 Americans because this idiot was so cavalier, because he was warned in November, and even Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is saying that now. By the way, the grunting and hooting and barking, the Dead Ferret Society in San Rafael was, "Fire Fauci! Fire Fauci!" Not a word about the guy whose inactivity, whose dithering, whose idiotic blathering, whose lies killed 600,000 Americans and counting. Because I guess that's just not fair, is it? No. It's infuriating. It's absolutely infuriating. What's that? Jack in Shreveport says, Bezos does space for recreation only. He's got his own personal mobile island that can stay permanently out in international waters. He's even got another yacht to shuttle stuff back and forth between his mobile island and whatever ports they want, without Jeffy ever having to sail or step into any country's jurisdiction. You know, does the world really need people that rich? Am I wrong, but in that Star Trek future, are there people that rich? Yeah, I don't know. Well, that's true. The LA Times isn't the Washington Post, says Randy in PA. But I don't know how you write that article without mentioning it. Pandemics are rare, Ms. Baumgartner writes. To avert the next one, epidemiologists will only have to have about a half dozen historical data points to work with. Understanding the pathway of SARS-CoV-2 is crucial to prioritizing prevention measures in the future. And there's talk about that, yes, we gave grants to the Wuhan Institute, yada, yada, yada. And the World Health Organization's reputation is on the line. Oh, please. The Wall Street Journal, in the meantime, reporting that COVID-19 deaths this year have already eclipsed 2020's toll. As wealthy nations vaccinate, growing death tally underscores worsening divide between rich and poor countries. I wonder why that is. Maybe ask the guy who owns your newspaper. Rupert Murdoch. 1,880,510 global deaths in 2020. 1,884,146 through the first 6 months, and not quite the first 6 months of 2021. We're just a little shy of 4 million dead. That would almost seem to indicate that the disease is getting worse and not better. Yeah, what's that, Steve? Steve says, perhaps COVID-19 was Gaia saying, I'm just reminding you what I can do. Another Donald Trump and I'll really show you what I can do. Well, let's be a little more global in our scope. Another Donald Trump, another Narendra Modi, another Jair Bolsonaro, or just more Jair Bolsonaro, more Narendra Modi, more Erdogan, more Duterte, more Putin. And these things can become inflection points. And this may yet be one. If you read the history, and no, I'm not comparing the two, because the Black Death was so much more horrifying because of lack of knowledge, lack of science, lack of understanding. But it led to the greatest wholesale change of European culture that has probably been known in the last 2,000 years. The feudal system, the medieval system of, well, the feudal system, more or less ended. Because as a result of the lack, and I mean, there are parallels. The European Renaissance was born out of the Black Plague and the population decline that came from it. And so villeins and serfs and peasants became less willing to stay on the land because suddenly their services were valuable. And there was a flowering of creativity. There was also a flowering of brutality. It came on the heels of the collapse of the Crusades, and all the Crusaders coming home, and they formed companies, and these roving bands of thugs wandered about the French countryside and just made France bleed and bleed for a century or more. They were led by people called captains, the captains of the companies. And periodically, desperate monarchs would try to, well, okay, you know what, we'll pay you to go over there and attack those people. And then comes the flowering of art and architecture, literature. And is there a little bit of that going on now? You know, Lindsey Graham out there grunting about the people who ain't willing to work for $7 an hour no more. That seems to have a little bit of a parallel with peasants being unwilling to stay on the land. And I was fortunate a couple of years back when I joined Chris in Germany in New York. We went to a fantastic museum exhibit of books from the medieval period. Beautiful, beautiful books. Books of days and prayer books and whatnot, and gorgeous, gorgeous illumination and illustration. And there were depictions of day-to-day life from season to season among the peasantry. And you saw the depictions of the happy little peasants hauling sheaves of wheat and whatnot. And, of course, it was bullshit because the happy little peasants weren't happy. It was probably much more like Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. But I wonder. And these changes don't happen overnight. But they do. They do happen. And maybe the coming generations are less willing to put up with the bullshit that that millennials and Gen X and the boomers did put up with. Of course, the boomers, and I'm either a late boomer or an early X. I identify more with early X. They had an America that was handed down to them from the so-called greatest generation that still worked fairly well. That's gone now. So it remains to be seen. Meanwhile, like I said, Biden is in Europe. And what a difference it makes. There has not been a single visual of Joe Biden elbowing anyone to get to the front of the photograph. There haven't been any embarrassing reports of rudeness or mendacity or outright lying or petulance or pissiness. And meanwhile, over in Mother Russia, they picked right up on something that Nitwit Nero said today. Trump asked Biden not to fall asleep at meeting with Putin. Yeah, I don't think Joe Biden's at any risk of that. We're also not at risk of him selling us out. And hey, our own translator will be there for a change. And there will probably even be notes. There's certainly nothing to be gained from meeting with him, except to maybe reiterate and look in his eyes and say, hey, you don't have a soul. And to have 68-year-old Putin go, nope. With any luck, our standing in the world will be at least somewhat improved. One can at least hope. Back here at home, however, there was an oversight hearing in the House of Representatives today with Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI. It did not go well because, jacketless Jim Shorts Jordan was there playing to the audience of one. He had a monologue all ready to go. Get the hockey puck because there's a lot of stupid here.
Chairman, Director Ray, thank you for being here. Over the past several years, Americans have seen their liberties attacked. Every right we enjoy under the First Amendment has been assaulted.
How's that? The First Amendment has never been more of a life support system for the religion industry than it has been in that time period.
Every single one. Your right to worship, your right to assemble, your right to petition, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, every single one. There are places today where a full congregation can still not meet on a Sunday morning.
Yep, because there's a pandemic going on and we'd actually like to get it under control. And there's nothing new in that, Jim Shorts. I know you think that history began with you, buddy, but it didn't. Public health measures have been upheld by the Supreme Court going way back before your nasty old great-granddaddy got with your nasty old great-grandmammy and started the chain of events that or perpetuated the chain of events that led to you.
Your right to assemble? 4 weeks ago, I spoke to the New Mexico Republican Party in Amarillo, Texas. They had to go to Texas for freedom because they weren't allowed to assemble in their own state.
Because they're a bunch of bioterrorist disease-spreading maggots!
Your right to petition your government? We sat here today on Capitol Hill having an important hearing with the director of the FBI, but our constituents can't come to their Capitol, lobby their member of Congress to redress their grievances because the Speaker of the House won't let them in.
Look, I would love and I would love nothing more than to be able to go back and work in D.C. on the AIC Act. But it isn't safe. Especially with the kind of people who think Jim Jordan is a great statesman barking and grunting out there. What a schmuck. And remember, if you want to hear a lot more of this kind of bilious horseshit, don't get excited about 2022. Don't have a sense of urgency for protecting the House's majority in 2022. Just follow the conventional wisdom. The Republicans are going to take the House. And then, you know, any hopes we have, limited though they are, by one man, Joe Manchin, any hopes we have will be flushed down the toilet. And we will get nonstop, 24/7. And look, the folks in the for-profit media who live for this kind of thing are probably eagerly awaiting the day so they can crank up the dramatic bumper music and run the chyrons at breakneck speed to bring us the impeachment hearings of Joe Biden. Because it will happen. And this blithering idiot will run the House Judiciary Committee. Are we clear? And so the kind of mad babble that he's spewing forth from his gob now will be all over the TV, 24/7. And the ratings will go up for all the cable news programs because we'll all tune back in because right now we're kind of asleep. And the greatest pity of it all is that the House is doing its job. The House is doing its work. They passed H.R. 1. Lickety-split, and sent it over to the Senate. And now we sweat it. They passed the Equality Act and sent it over to the Senate, and here we sit. And Nancy Pelosi has recently taken some grief for saying that the John Lewis Act won't be ready by August, or till August, or after. And some people have said, well, you know, that's a strategic mistake. Because she needs to get it sent on over to the Senate so that she can put Joe Manchin in a box. Well, you know, nobody puts baby in the corner. And that, you know, if the John Lewis Act was sitting there in the Senate, then by God, then Joe Manchin would be on the hot seat. Then he'd have to find those 10 noble centrist moderate Republicans to. Oh. Yeah. How come the House isn't holding hearings on January 6th? Benghazi, anyone? Well, those hearings are coming. And guess who's it? And it's going to be nonstop nonsense from this guy, because it'll probably be held in judiciary. And even if it was a select committee, do you think Kevin McCarthy isn't going to put this babbling boob, Jim Shorts Jordan, on that committee? And, you know, for as much as we talk about Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber and Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, who, by the way, voters in her district in Colorado are saying, what the fuck did we do? Well, they're not saying that in Georgia about Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber so much. It's worth remembering how Marge got there. There was a Democratic opponent. But her QAnon maggot followers so viciously harassed him that he chickened out for this. And that's an unfair phrase, I guess. That's uncharitable. But he decided he'd rather protect his family and get out of the race and get left alone than perhaps be killed via the stochastic terrorism that Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber pumps out there like a Keystone XL pipeline diameter outlet of sewage. That's how she got there. She ran unopposed. But my point is, yesterday it was Louis Asparagus Gomert asking the food and U.S. Department of Agriculture if they might go to work on trying to alter the orbit of the moon. And this stuff is catnip, and I'm guilty. It's catnip to me too. And it's hard to avoid. And really, there is no avoiding it. I mean, it's just another example of the morons and the titanic intellect and the thorns in the side that we deal with on any given day. But there's an aspect of eyes off the ball that comes with it. Because unless it's for spectacle value, any appointment to any select committee is going to have Jim Shorts Jordan on it. Probably have Matt Gaetz on it. Can somebody please indict him? And hell, like I said, just for spectacle value, maybe it'll have Lauren Bobblehead Boobert on it or Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber if it's a select committee. But if it goes through judiciary, the carnival will be complete with this barking mad fool.
Freedom of the press. Maybe the best example is the president won't go to the border. The vice president won't go to the border. When Secretary Mayorkas went to the border, he wouldn't let the press in the very facilities he was touring. And, of course, freedom of speech, we all know what's happened to that. Big tech censoring conservatives, the cancel culture mob attacking anyone who disagrees with them.
You mean like the way you attacked a member of your own caucus, Jim Shorts? Not that I'm a fan of Liz Cheney. Still haven't found that quote from Liz attacking the Senate Republicans who stopped the January 6th commission. If it's out there, I every now and then I remember and I go looking for it. But so far, you know, it's crickets. Yeah, the cancel culture mob.
Deplatforming the sitting president of the United States, Democrats writing letters to the network carriers telling them to take certain news organizations off their network, off their platform. Freedom is under attack. And, Director, a lot of Americans think you're part of the problem. Before you got there, the Comey FBI spied on the Trump campaign. Over the last 3 years, the FBI labeled the baseball field shooting where our friend and colleague Steve Scalise was shot, labeled that suicide by cop for 3 years. We know the guy set out to go after Republicans. He had a piece of paper in his pocket with six Republican names on it. But somehow the FBI thought it was suicide by cop. Thank goodness.
Funny how he's not going to mention any of the times that lawful gun owners have mowed down people all over this country. And he's not going to mention, carrying bear spray to a harmless little peaceful assemblage. Yeah, that freedom of association that he was talking about being so clamped down, looked like people were assembling a whole lot there on January 6th, Jim Shorts. And they attacked the Capitol building you're sitting in. That somehow will not get a mention.
You've changed that. More recently, the FBI raided the New York apartment of Mayor Giuliani.
Because Mayor Giuliani is the subject of a criminal investigation, and executing search warrants is laid out right there in the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, but never mind.
The president's personal lawyer, former U.S. attorney, ran the Southern District of New York office. According to press accounts, he said he was willing to give whatever information you all wanted, whatever the Justice Department wanted. But no, you kicked in his door instead.
Kicked in his door!
How about the couple in Alaska? Paul and Marilyn Huper. They sure witnessed an attack on their liberty in an up-close and personal...
Sit, Liberty. Sit.
...way. The FBI kicked in their door, handcuffed them, held them at gunpoint, interrogated them for 4 hours in their own home. There was just one problem. They had the wrong people.
Ha! No, really? Really? Oh, wait. These were white folks in Alaska, weren't they? Because I'm pretty sure Breonna Taylor's not going to get a mention, now is she? Remember, the dude that the cops in Louisville were after was already in custody. But that's okay. They blew through the door and blew her away in her sleep. She's not going to get a mention either.
Had the wrong people. Took their phones, took their laptop.
Not their phones and laptops. I don't think in here we're going to get took their lives or killed them in their sleep.
Took a pocket-sized copy of the Constitution.
No.
There's got to be some irony in that.
Oh, this whole thing's nothing but irony.
And then there's FISA. 2018 FISA court Judge Boasberg said there were major privacy violations by the FBI. 2019, Inspector General Horowitz did two investigations. First one was on the Carter Page FISA application. He found 17 errors in that, 151 wrong or unsupported statements in that FISA application. 17 errors, 51 wrong statements. That's a nice way of saying 68 lies that were taken to the FISA court. Mr. Horowitz then looked at 25 randomly sampled.
68 whole lies. 68. The flag is falling. 68 lies. How many did your God Emperor tell in the course of 4 years there, Jim Shorts? Never mind that. I mean, that's just nitpicking. But hey, Jim, how many have you told about, not knowing about boys being raped on your watch when there's credible testimony that you were informed of what the doc was doing to your lads? How many times have you lied, Jim Shorts?
FISA application, specifically the Woods file, the underlying documents that supports what's taken to the court, in every single one he said there was a problem. All 25.
Mercy sakes alive.
In four of them, he couldn't even find the Woods file. But the last time the director was in front of us, February of last year...
That's okay. Never mind a Woods file. Jim Shorts couldn't find his ass with both hands.
You told us everything was fine. You said this, quote, "Americans should not lose sleep over the FISA application process." But just 2 months ago, Judge Boasberg was back with another report. And he said there are, quote, "apparent widespread violations by the FBI of the standards they have in place to deal with Section 702 of FISA." Which raises a sort of fundamental question. Why are you using the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act to spy on Americans, Director?
Well, dumb shit, There's an old maxim they teach in law school, and rumor has it you actually went to law school. I don't know if you learned anything. I'm guessing the answer is no. But you never ask a question you don't know the answer to. I, however, can suggest an answer. And that is this. The reason American citizens were surveilled was because they were doing dodgy business with foreign nationals and foreign governments. You know, stuff that probably ran right up to the edge of treason and may have crossed over a couple of times, Mike Flynn. But there won't be any mention of Michael Flynn. There won't be any mention of Rudy Giuliani engaging in illegal foreign policy, trying to set up a dummied-up dodge against Joe Biden. No. Matt in San Francisco asks, is Jim Shorts ever going to approach anything resembling a point? No. It reminds me of an old Doonesbury strip where some senator was babbling along, and might have been Roland Headley who asked, a verb, Senator, we need a verb!
I appreciate the tough job you have, and the good work that the vast majority of your agents, I think, do. But freedom-loving Americans have concerns about their liberty, but I think they also have concerns about the opportunity cost. When you're kicking in the door of the president's lawyer, when you're interrogating innocent couple for 4 hours, when you're spying on Americans, then by definition, that means there are fewer resources going to stop terrorists at our southern border, stopping cyber attacks, prosecuting Antifa terrorists and other rioters who attack law enforcement, small businesses, the Capitol, and did over $1 billion of damage over the last year.
Wait. Oh, stop. I can't stand it. Antifa and other rioters, ... who attacked the Capitol. I haven't heard anything like that since W was trotting out the idea that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Wow. My stomach just did a flip-flop. I just realized September 11th, 2021 is going to be the 20th anniversary of that horrible day where manifest disinterest and failures of Republican administration intelligence allowed hijacked planes to be flown into buildings and got over 3,000 Americans killed in one day. Which is 597,000 less people than Nitwit Nero let get killed in the course of a year. But oh, what a grief orgy that's going to be! And I mean no disrespect to the people who lost people 2 decades ago. But I have a feeling I don't know how I'll handle it. Go and hit a trail and wander around in the hills here. Anything to keep away from the... Because that will be... Oh, that's going to be multimillionaire media catnip. But you just heard a whole lot of horseshit. And we are perilously close to that guy being the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Now, from time to time, I say things on this program, or other people say things on this program, that amount to fairly nauseating stuff, and we talk about ruining dinner in this or that time zone. What I just said should put us off of breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a couple of days, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how to make sure that we get excited about 2022, but we better be. And I hope to God that when Reverend Barber comes to West Virginia, there will be some talk about 2022. Because it's one thing to have the nation angry at Joe Manchin, and the nation is angry by a wide margin at Joe Manchin. But that anger needs to have some focus. That anger needs to have a purpose, because he is enabling the voter suppression that is contemplated in state after state after state. What the Republican legislatures do in those states, Texas, Georgia, Florida, what have you, they will only be able to do as long as Joe Manchin continues to block the For the People Act. That won't be Jim Shorts Jordan's fault. It won't be Louis Asparagus Gohmert's fault. It won't be Clanny Oakley, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert's fault. It won't be Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber's fault. It will be Joe Manchin's fault. And I hope we can point that out, because those are the stakes. And this isn't necessarily partisan. I want, because I'm a constitutionalist, as opposed to a constitutional scholar like Mike Lee, I want everybody who is legally able to vote to be able to vote. Republicans cannot say that. They will not say that. Because that way lies the end of the Republican Party. Or maybe the Republican Party, its end has already happened. That way lies the life or death of the Maggot Party, the Grand Q Party, the American Fascist Party, which is what used to be the Republican Party now is. I know, it's kind of a conundrum. Stephen New York says, I guarantee you that if I fact-checked what Jim Shorts Jordan is saying, I would find that nearly all of it was lies. I guarantee it. But the reason I won't fact-check Jim Shorts Jordan, see my earlier pledge from the beginning of the program. Move on, do what you can. I get it. Wow. Just wow, Megan says. So they're really going to cling to the notion that Antifa was behind the Capitol attack? Yeah, they are. They have been. You know why? Because just like claiming that Saddam Hussein did 9/11 motivated a majority of Americans to say, yeah, bomb them, kill them, kill them. I don't care who we kill. We got to kill them. And remember, you know, people were pouring out. Oh, God. Well, they changed the name to French fries to freedom fries in the goddamn Capitol cafeterias. And maybe because it's so long ago, you know, late 2002, early 2003. And it blows my mind to think that that was 19 years ago, 18 years ago. It doesn't feel like 18 years have passed. I don't feel like this program is that old, but it is. But maybe because it has receded into the distant past. I mean, my God, more time has passed since then than the space of time between the end of the Second World War and the year of my birth. Ooh. But maybe we forget the bloodlust frenzy that this country went into. I I'll never forget. I had just come back to radio. And I was immediately referred to by loyal Bushies, Repiglickens, as Bob Al-Kincaida. Oh, 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 ain't that cute? Ain't that funny? You know why they called me Bob Al-Kincaida? Because I suggested that it was morally wrong to slaughter innocent civilians in pursuit of a lie. To slaughter innocent civilians as the result of an illegal act. We did that. We can do it again. People have been remarking on the absolute willingness of the American people to jump behind any martial slaughter at first over the decades. That was what motivated Mark Twain to write the War Prayer. He was disgusted to see how easily the American people were whipped into a murderous frenzy over places and events that they didn't even remotely understand. It happened over the Spanish-American War. It happened over Cuba. It happened over the Philippines. It was the Philippines that particularly disgusted Twain in the twilight of his life. He had been watching America's fascination, lust, fetish for wealth. And he was sickened by it. He'd seen it as a young man in the frenzy to go to the Civil War. He wrote a piece called A Brief History of a Campaign That Failed, about his brief dalliance with that horrifying conflict before he lit out for the territories with his brother, Orion. And we did it again in the middle of the second decade of the 20th century, when Woodrow Wilson campaigned on the idea of, you know, he kept us out of war. He campaigned for his second term on that, and then promptly got us into it after the sinking of the Lusitania. And there was a much more viable, vibrant, real left back then. And for suggesting that it was not a good idea for us to get involved in that battle between the European cousins, using working people as their pawns. People were imprisoned. And out of it came some of the first halting steps toward real something resembling real freedom of speech. But the repression was brutal. There's a great... Early in the film Reds, there's a monologue by Jack Reed before the, oh, I forget what it was called, the Portland Society or whatever it was, talking about what he had seen in the Great War and denouncing the idea of getting into it and suggesting why it might be that we would, because we were heavily invested with the British side. And the investor class damned well didn't want to lose their investment. In Matewan, which is set in 1921, someone asks the fictional organizer character, Joe Keenihan, why he went to prison for not going to the war. And he remarks, all I seen was workers killing workers. which is what it was, in the name of some inbred cousins. And the same frenzy attended Vietnam. And the same frenzy attended every conflict we've gotten into since. And here we are. And I guess I'm back on. I'm back beating that Wuhan lab theory trope. It'll have deadly consequences. It has the possibility of deadly consequences. And it'll be great for the network ratings. Donald Trump might be bad for America, but he's great for CBS. Remember that? Yeah. Stephen New York says, I'm thinking there won't be a grief orgy because it was only New York. I suspect if there's some sort of grief orgy, it will focus on the Pentagon because that's the Vatican of the death cult. Ooh, that's a great term. The Pentagon, the Vatican of the death cult. No. See, they will, no, they will use New York as a fetish object. They hate it on general, they hate New York on general principle. But they love it as a bloody shirt to wave. And Jim Shorts Jordan mentioning Steve Scalise. When I hear Steve Scalise's name, you know what I think about? I think about the guy who was taken down by a weapon of war and still remained loyal to the NRA. I guess because the check was clearing. Is that what it was? Yeah, the FBI only changed it over to a domestic terrorism attack after 3 years of calling it suicide by cop. Well, pardon me while I wait for Jim Jordan to refer to January 6th as a domestic terrorism attack perpetrated by the kind of people who vote for him. That's all. Mike in Cascadia, subject line, Innocence Abroad. As a young journalist, Twain traveled from Paris to Rome to Jerusalem and many points in the Holy Land. He documented his travels in Innocence Abroad. I've read it multiple times. I love it. The quote I remember from the book is, "Travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness, and many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth all one's lifetime." So it's no wonder, Mike observes, that he'd arrive eventually at the war prayer. And yeah, he got there via several stops along the way. Not the least was his observance of the way white people viewed their place in the world compared to different hues. Twain's excoriated for the way he used language in things like Huckleberry Finn. Every now and then there will be some outcry that Huck Finn needs to be censored. But I think Twain knew damned well what he was doing. He was, after all, a genius. And he didn't use the term as an attack. He used it as a cultural reflection of just how awful his own countrymen were. Thanks for that, Mike. I appreciate that. The Innocents Abroad, by the way, is also freaking hilarious. That's where Ferg got his nickname. Mike, you read it. You'll recall what they refer to their tour guides as, especially in Rome. Ferguson. him and the doctor, Twain and the doctor. The guide trying to show him a piece of paper signed by Christopher Colombo, and Twain recreates the dialogue and the accent and everything. The great Christopher Colombo signed his paper. And the doctor picks up peers over the document and puts on his spectacles. And, great Christopher Colombo, huh? And then Twain says, he then stood up and used the line that destroys our tour guides every time. Is he dead? Oh, nom de Dieu, the great Christopher Colombo! And at one point, the doctor looks at him and says, now, see here, Ferguson. If you've got examples of good penmanship, trot them out. But just because we're Americans, don't we think you can be passing off these chicken scratchings as a proper example of writing? And that is where, that's where our son got his nickname. Because before we knew who he was or what he was or how he was, he began being referred to as Ferguson because he was a stranger whose name we did not know. And it stuck. He is Ferg to this day. Thanks for the memory, Mike. Thank you. Oh, please, let's leave Jim Shorts Jordan behind. No, I can't. No more. No more Caitlyn Jenner. No. And what's that? Louis Gohmert may have just implicated himself in the Capitol attack? Well, that would be delightful. Over at Politicus USA. A clip from Louis Asparagus Gohmert. Scott McFarlane tweeting, this is a whopper of an allegation without any supporting records from Representative Louis Gohmert, saying Capitol Police told him they expected Trump opponents disguised in MAGA gear to appear on January 6th at the Capitol. Huh? What? Okay, where's my... Oh, wrong button. Someday I'm going to get a producer. Let's try this again.
January 5th, that evening, I was talking to Capitol Police officers, and I said, you know, let's face it, most of the...
Most what?
...conservatives that come, they don't have any intention of being violent. And they said, well, we've been briefed today that there's a good bit of it's understood online activity that there are people that are going to be coming that hate Trump, but they're going to dress up in red MAGA Trump paraphernalia to try to blend in and create trouble.
He's been trotting that silly shit out for a while. Of course, there's no supporting evidence. And of course, Louis is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist Christian. So that means, he's a liar. Yeah, more things that Jim Shorts Jordan didn't mention in his little 6-minute diatribe. The guy had a piece of paper with the names of 6 pig fuckers on it. Are you going to mention, talking about the guy who shot up the baseball practice and shot Steve Scalise? Brother Deacon Asa says, are you going to mention Caesar Sayoc mailing pipe bombs to prominent Democrats, you filthy, degenerate piece of shit, Jim Shorts Jordan? No. See, Caesar Sayoc doesn't get a mention. Caesar Sayoc was misunderstood. What an evening. And we got about 15 minutes to go in the program if anybody's got anything that they want to get off their chest. Otherwise, I'm going to go on to more madcap merriness on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's go down to Tennistan for a minute. It's a bit of a bell jar laboratory for maggotry. There's a publication called the Times Free Press, and they published an article about a new survey of Republican and Democratic voters in Tennistan. And it's almost like the Republicans and the Democrats in Tennistan live in some sort of Star Trek alternate reality. Get this, 71% of Republican voters and 30% of independents in Tennistan said, clicked agree on a statement that Joe Biden stole the 2020 presidential election. Not a single blessed shred of evidence supports that claim. But again, we're talking about believing. And that's what maggots and repiglicans do. They believe things, which is to embrace an idea without reference to knowledge or facts. That's the result of the big lie. Over at Vanderbilt University's Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions, Dr. Josh Clinton, who's a poli-sci professor there and serves as that center's co-director, said, "This is a remarkable number, that the vast majority of a political party feels the other party is illegitimate despite the lack of any evidence." How remarkable is it? 30 years ago, it might have been remarkable. No, let's make it 40. Let's get ourselves pre-Reagan. Because since then, Republicans have been believing some pretty wild shit. Republicans believe that Ronald Reagan almost single-handedly defeated the evil empire, the Soviet Union. And then, as aforementioned, 20 years later, Republicans believed that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the attacks of September 11th, 2001. So while I appreciate the tenor of Dr. Josh Clinton's remarks, I don't know how remarkable it is that Republicans believe unbelievable, unfactual things. We're getting close to time. The boys know that I come out there after the program's over. 71%. And you know what? Go to Alabama. It'll be 90% of Republicans and 50% of independents. The numbers will be similar in Mississippi Stan and Arkansas. Haley knows that. They'll be nearly identical in Kentucky and South Carolina and in North Carolina. And the demographics will break out. People will the less melanin one has in one's skin organ, the more likely the person is to believe this kind of hogwash. And in the survey, of course, Joe Biden's name was used. And this from the story, when the question used Biden's name as well as that of his plan, Just 29% of Republicans said they approved of it, while 96% of Democrats supported it. Pollsters then posed the question to other survey participants without mentioning either Biden's name or the name of the proposal. GOP support doubled to 59%, according to the results, while Democrats' support dipped slightly. This is no surprise. You remember the man on the street stuff that, what's his name? The guy whose face looks like a banana. Jay Leno. Was it his program where they asked people about, which would you rather have, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare? And people on the street there in Southern California said, I think the Affordable, and, you know, they would wax philosophic. I think the Affordable Care Act is what America needs. We don't need that. We don't need that Obamacare. That's socialism. Every now and then we get these little snapshots of just how goddamn dumb about a third of this country is. Or maybe more. That portion of this country that's willing to vote for a serial bankrupt because they think he's rich. Dr. Clinton went on to say, the fact that there is broad support for these economic issues when partisan indicators are omitted shows that political context can really affect people's reactions to important policy issues depending on how these issues are framed. I don't have all the survey metrics in front of me, but I wonder if that does that, because he offers that up as an observation of something that is universal, at least in terms of American politics. But is it? To use the Obamacare example, didn't most of our side know that Obamacare and the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act were the same thing? Didn't we? I don't know. I want to believe that. And maybe that's what's at work here in West Virginia, where 79% of Republicans here want the For the People Act, and 86% of Democrats or something like that want it. And 81% of independents want it. And you know what, Randy and PA, you're probably right. It happens because this country is relying upon TV news. Big mistake. As to that 70% number in Tennessee, Stephen New York says, my first inclination was to want to say to them, why would he steal an election but lose seats in the House and tie in the Senate? Then I remembered my pledge. This is going to be hard. Pledges are difficult in that regard. And thank you so much to Colin. Thank you, Colin. Thank you very much for helping out like you just did. We're down to 730 to clear the week. 31 more bucks and we won't have a four-digit fundraising hole tomorrow. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So that's pretty, we're pretty near the end of the program. But you know how, Jim Shorts Jordan was, the cancel culture mob will cancel anybody they don't agree with, was Gene. Well, again, this is a case of talking points being generated and flowing around the right-wing derposphere before the truth can get its shoes on. Let's take in a little moment, because God knows I'd never watch it by choice. Let's take in a little moment of Fox and Fiends, where Steve Ducey and Ainsley Earhart and Brian Kilmeade had a little shit hemorrhage over, ethnic issues in the United States. Let's remember This is three millionaires talking.
Big difference between now and the 1960s. They're not acknowledging any improvement in our culture, the gains made, and how we're more equal, even despite our faults, than any other country. The other thing is, they're not only trying to raise up minorities.
Time out there, Steve Ducey. We're more equal than any other country? Can we get a little empirical data on that? Because I don't think that's true. I think we're probably less equal than Denmark. I think we're pretty much less equal than Sweden? Switzerland? Less equal than perhaps even Mexico in terms of institutional inequality. Less equal than Canada? Oh, but anyway, these are idiots. Let's let them go on, because we're gonna get to the pissing and moaning part in a second.
And make sure the playing field is even. They're trying to take down the white culture, and they're wondering why.
Ding!
This generation of
they're trying to take down white culture. You know, logically, one should have some sort of a working definition of something before one claims that it's being taken down. And I'm just itching to know what white culture is. As, you know, a perilously pale person, I would like to know what white culture is. Is it mayonnaise culture? No, no, white culture. Is it a culture when your culture consists entirely of appropriating stuff from other cultures? Is that well, that's not white culture. That's Ferengi culture. Wait.
Of Americans wonders, why aren't we all Americans? Why are we being marginalized on a daily basis on our gender, our sexuality, and the color of our skin? And it's
holy shit, they're being marginalized. The dominant, privileged culture of the United States of America. But, you know, that's a broadcast that's done for the benefit of Emery and Marveline, who don't sleep so long anymore. And so they're right there with eyes on the screens at 6 o'clock in the morning or whenever the hell this program comes on. That's right. That's right, Marveline. I've been feeling marginalized for a while in my white culture. I'm feeling terrible divided. I didn't feel so divided back when we decided who could vote and who couldn't and who could sit at a lunch counter.
It's not even subtle. It is actually out there.
Sure.
It is written in black and white. This is the big difference between other civil rights movements in our past. One, the first big one was a war. The second big one we saw in the streets, especially in the South. And this one we're seeing in the classrooms, and we've seen the enemy, and it's white people.
It's pretty-
and they wonder why people...
Well, maybe it went from the battlefield to the streets to the classrooms, because what happened on the battlefield and the streets is being suppressed, and we're trying to do a little better job of teaching it in the classroom. I mean, could that possibly be? Oh, never mind.
We'll have a problem with it.
It's pretty simple what most families in America, I think, are teaching their kids, and that's the golden rule, to love others as yourself. Don't see people for skin color. We look to the Bible in my house. We love everybody. Everyone was created by God, and we live in this great country where you
Wait,
can be
the Bible?
You want
to you
be.
Look you look to the Bible? The Bible that had the slavery in it, Ainsley? Is that the Bible you're looking toward? The Bible. The Bible where enemies are rounded up and slaughtered, and the only ones not slaughtered are the virgin females of childbearing age so that they can be given to the priestly class to be raped. Is that the same? Are we talking about the same Bible? Are we talking about the same Bible where Jesus H. Christ doesn't say shit about LGBTQ people at all? But he does say that people like you are going to, it'll be easier to get a camel through the eye of a needle than for the likes of you to enter the kingdom of heaven. That Bible? Yeah, I didn't think so. Thank you to our anonymous friend We will now not have a four-digit fundraising goal tomorrow. Thank you so much. Time to get out of here. Time flies. And so we enter the second three-hour filler obster of the week in the Ledger. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I like for people to have a chance to talk, but you let me yammer away, and I will. No doubt about it. And so thanks to each and every one of you, of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal, for being partial sponsors of the program with your kind gifts. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thank you this evening for helping to take down these monumental fundraising goals. Thank you so much. That means again, thanks to Colin, thanks to Samson, thanks to Jeremy. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is right here at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. If you have not gotten your vaccine already, please get it as soon as you possibly can. In the meantime, it's your last line of defense, not your first. Use your first line defenses. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Wear your mask when it is appropriate to do so. Keep your social distance. And especially, you know, if somebody that's not wearing a jacket comes toward you, or a mask, and says, the Antifa was wearing, the Antifa and other rioters attacked the Capitol. Avoid that guy like the plague. Because he is. Later.